This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a sixth win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, and as always, it is presented by our friends at Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you all across North America on Sirius 162, XM 207, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net and available anywhere you get your podcasts each and every week. Well, with the 2024 edition of the Breeders' Cup now less than 48 hours away, I thought it would be fun to spend this hour looking back on some of the horses who have provided us with such incredible Breeders' Cup memories over the years, and not just remember those horses on this show here today, but also look back on the stories surrounding those races with the trainers who did such a masterful job preparing those horses for some of the shining moments we've had the privilege to enjoy. In the first half of the show today, Trainer Dale Romans is going to look back on his trio of Breeders' Cup victories, the first of which, by the way, occurred 15 years ago at Santa Anita. And in the second half of the show, Hall of Fame trainer Todd Pletcher remembers his 15 Breeders' Cup wins, the first coming 20 years ago at Lone Star Park with his brilliant champion filly, A Shadow, in the Breeders' Cup distaff. So two outstanding trainers celebrating some very special Breeders' Cup anniversaries here in 2024. And Dale, my friend, I have to tell you, it is always a privilege for me to welcome you to any show here on the network, but to be able to spend some time reflecting upon a few of your signature victories and what has been a tremendous career is going to be pretty awesome. So I appreciate the time, and happy anniversary, my friend.
Well, thank you. You know, until you texted me yesterday, I didn't realize it had been that long. 15 years seems like yesterday. The first
time
we get started, I got to say that it feels like we're cheating on Tim. Talking without him.
Well, he's never won a Breeders' Cup race.
No, he hasn't. He never will. But we're going to miss him for this half hour.
Yeah, we certainly will. But you'll be back with Tim Saturday morning on the Equine Forum, a special Breeders' Cup edition of I Ask, They Answer, and that's going to be a lot of fun. But, Dale, let's dive right into it. You came into the Breeders' Cup 15 years ago, 2009 at Santa Anita. You had been close in previous years, but unable to break through until this point when Tappet's Fly did this.
They come into the top of the lane now. On the outside, we have Tappet's Fly, the grey, coming up to tackle Rose Catherine, but Rose Catherine's got something left, and she battles right back. These two come through the stretch together. Hathia is back in third. Past the eighth pole they come, and it's Tappet's Fly on the outside. Down at the rail, Rose Catherine, but it's going to be Tappet's Fly to win it. Here's the wire. Tappet's Flyer has won it by a neck. Tappet's Fly to Rose Catherine second. House of Grace came running on for third, and Jungle Tail from last to finish fourth.
All right, Dale, a trip down memory lane for you there. What was going through your mind just now as you were listening to Trevor call that race?
It was an amazing day, beautiful day at Santa Anita, and I just remember running down a lane trying to hold off Rose Catherine. I believe Javier Castellano rode her for Paul Pompa, and he dropped his stick in the stretch.
Ooh.
And not many people knew that or remember that, but I remember watching it and him finishing without a whip and Robbie riding the hair off of Tappet's Fly, a homebred, which I bought her mother out of a field over with Brereton Jones at Airdrie Stud. I called him, and Frank Jones had called me and said he wanted to buy a horse for the end of the year so he could write it off, and I guess he'd made a lot of money that year. So we went, he said, go find me a sales role. He said, go find me a horse. So I called Brereton. I knew he had a bunch of yearlings. He said, come over and pick one out. And went out in the field, and there were probably 30 of them out there. I don't know a bunch of them, but we were standing around looking at them. I said, well, I'll take this one and pay $50,000 for Tappet's Fly's mother, which Flying Marlin, which had a nice career rate, about a quarter of a million, but she wasn't state course. So Frank really never owned a lot of broodmares. And I asked him, so let's just keep this one because I think she's better than what we ever showed on the racetrack and see what we get. And it was the first crop of Tappet. I think we paid $12,000 or something for the stud fee and came up with Tappet's Fly. So, you know, training her mother and watching her grow up made it even more special. And to win it for Frank Jones, which is like a father to me. I mean, he was at the hospital the day I was born. He was my father's best friend and owned horses. And he never had any kids. And he passed away this year. So maybe think about him when you text me yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and again, all of these things come kind of through your mind when you start thinking back on anniversaries of these special events, not just in horse racing, but in our life, Dale. And yeah, Frank Jones, one of the real good guys in racing, he certainly missed.
Yes, he was. And, you know, when you start looking back on things, when you're going through them, I don't know if you really realize how special those moments are. And, you know, if I walk around and look at the trophies we've got, when they hand them to you, it's not that big a deal. It didn't seem like back then. But as you get older and you start reflecting back on things, all that stuff's important to you. It's nothing like collecting memories through life.
Do you still have some memorabilia from Tappet's Fly's career or maybe from that Breeders' Cup win?
I've got her Breeders' Cup trophy, and I've got the trophies from when she, you know, when she went on to win some grade ones later on in her life. She went on and had a really good career. And we actually sold her at the Night of Stars sale when she was four, at the end of her four-year-old year, for $1.85 million. And it was a pretty good turnaround for the money she made and what we got for her after a $12,000 stud fee. And then, of course, everybody knows what Tappet did after that as a stallion. But she went on. She went to Japan and ended up producing the filly Grand Allegra, which was rated as high as number three in the world at one time. So she not only did it on the racetrack, she also did it as a broodmare.
You know, it took her a few starts to kind of get going. She was fifth in her debut and then third, and then she finished second, and then she finally broke through in her fourth career start, and then three starts later she wins the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf. What was the key to kind of getting her moving in the right direction?
We were always real high on her. We thought she was a really good racehorse and when she first came in here. I think when she got over to the grass, though, she showed what she was really worth and what she could really do. And I think just moving her over there was a big deal. And then, you know, there was the race at Belmont. We were prepping, trying to get a win in your end, and it came off the turf. And she didn't run all that well, but she was training so good. And, you know, that was a big decision on whether or not to put up the money and go. You know, Frank wasn't one of those guys that would just throw money around, and I had to make a pretty compelling argument that we needed to be in there, even though we were going to be a long shot. And he said, do what you think's best, and he put the money up. And we took her out there, and she did everything right when she was out there. I mean, I remember I wasn't able to go back then. I had all those Ramsey horses and stuff. We had 200 horses in training here, and so I wanted to send her early. So I sent her out there, and Walter Blum was getting on her. You know, he's one of the best hands on the racetrack, and he would call me every morning after she trained talking about how good she did, and how well she was training. She's just getting better and better. And Aaron Grider worked her for us a week before on the grass. And, you know, Aaron's a good friend, always has been, and he said Robbie couldn't make it out, so he was going to work her for me. So I told Walter, go up there and clock her and give me a play-by-play as she's working. So he called me when she went on the racetrack, and I remember every pole she went past, she worked 5/8 a mile. Every pole, all Walter would say was winner, winner, five times around there. He just told me winner. And every time she wasn't right. And Aaron came to call me after the work, and he couldn't have been happier with her. So we went out there with a little bit of confidence. But, you know, it's tough to win a Breeders' Cup race. And you never know if you're going to get another chance. I'd had two good shots in Texas 20 years before, like you're talking about when Todd won his first, when we ran second, both of them. And at that point, I thought, well, I'll never have another Breeders' Cup star. I'm just lucky to come up with these two horses. And Tappet's Fly comes along. And, you know, anytime you can check a box off when the Breeders' Cup race was a box, and we got it checked off that day.
I want to talk about
Tammy
your other.
Tammy loved that filly. She was working a lot, but she had scheduled a trip to New Zealand with a bunch of friends to go hiking and kayaking, two things I had no interest in. and her and a bunch of girls were in New Zealand. This is a little side story about the race. And she said she couldn't get reception to watch the race anymore. Finally, she found a little corner of an island where they had kayaked to that she got reception and got to watch it with all the girls and see Tappets Fly win the race.
Oh, that is such a cool story. Wow, that is so awesome. You know, I want to get to the other two Breeders' Cup winners in just a minute, but before we do, you brought up 2004, that year at Lone Star Park, 20 years ago. As you mentioned, Todd Pletcher gets his first two Breeders' Cup wins in that event. You came close, though. You come up just short with Kitten's Joy in the Breeders' Cup turf, and then you come up second again with Roses in May in the Breeders' Cup Classic that same year. What do you remember about those? I know you didn't win them, Dale, but what do you remember about those particular races and those particular horses?
Well, the biggest thing I remember is Kitten's Joy should have been put up. You know, better.
Oh, yeah.
But he ran into us to do it. And if everybody, you know, people that I remember, I'm sure nobody else does, it was about a 15-minute inquiry. And that might have been the longest 15 minutes of my life, waiting to see if he, because he was just such a special horse. And the track came up really soft that day, and I don't think that was his best going. And he had beaten Better Talk Now before, believe me. He was just such a good horse, and I wanted him to be a Breeders' Cup winner. But I also remember I made more money that day than I'd ever made in my life or ever thought I would make, but left there like somebody punched me in the stomach because I just wanted that little Breeders' Cup trophy. And, you know, all week, Bobby Frankel was with Roses of May, of course. I think we just got outrun. Ghost Zapper, one of the finest horses of my career that I've watched running. And Bobby Frankel's barn was across from me, and I would go over and sit with him every day and at feed time and stuff. And just, I told him, I said, I got you, Bobby. I think I will beat you today. And his little squeaky voice told me I had no chance to ever beat Ghost Zapper. I told Johnny, I said, get on his flank. And that might have been as tough a Breeders' Cup race top to bottom as was ever assembled. And there were some great horses in there that day. And I told Johnny, I said, just get on his flank and aggravate him all the way around there. And, you know, he'll get aggravated and stop. Well, he got aggravated and just ran away from us. He was some kind of special racehorse. But Roses was a great horse, too.
Yeah, that was, you're right about that field. That field was absolutely loaded. And as you said, maybe one of the greatest renewals of the Breeders' Cup Classic we've seen. Not the closest finish, but in terms of the quality of horses that were in that race, Dale, just incredible.
You got to handicap that race. Even the filly in there was such a good filly. Azari was such a good filly. And Ghost Zapper to me stood out on overalls, but top to bottom, that field was as good as you get. And I think Roses of May running that same race would have won over 2/3 of the Breeders' Cups that have been run.
Yep, you had Ghost Zapper, Roses of May. Pleasantly Perfect was third. Perfect Drift was fourth. Then the champion, Azari, the Hall of Famer. You had Birdstone in there. You had Funny Side in that race. Bowman's Band, who was good on his day. It was a really solid renewal.
It was. It was a good race. And, I thought they did a good job there at Lone Star. We had a lot of fun. And I went there, and that one I went to, I was there for almost 2 weeks with the two horses and totally focused on trying to get my first little Breeders' Cup trophy. Dallas, I really liked Dallas. It was a good spot.
Talking with trainer Dale Romans, looking back on some of his Breeders' Cup memories. We started by looking back on his first Breeders' Cup win, which came 15 years ago with Tappets Fly at Santa Anita in 2009. It was 2 years later that Dale would come to his home track of Churchill Downs and do this with Court Vision.
At the top of the lane, can Goldakova find somewhere to run? Whitecap right behind the leaders. Geronimo Sydney's candy. Goldakova's hooking out. Goldakova's hooking out, and here she comes now. Tour Allure, the grey on the extreme outside. Goldakova, Tour Allure, Court Vision's running a huge one. Gio Ponti late. It's Goldakova in the race of her life. Tour Allure, Court Vision. Court Vision going to outrun her. Tour Allure on the outside. Oh, they hit it together. Too close to call. Court Vision, Tour Allure, an inch in it. Goldakova, what a mess.
magnificent run. She almost got there, but Goldakova finished up third in a valiant effort, and Geoponte once again right behind Goldakova in fourth.
Well, you talk about a stacked field, Dale. Court Vision finding a way to pull off a very narrow upset that night.
I was just thinking that same thing when I was listening to the replay. I forgot how good that field was. That was a tough bunch of horses. And you know, Court Vision was an interesting horse. He's one of the coolest horses I was ever around. He had three different trainers in his career. All three of us won grade ones with him, with Bill Mott and Rick Dutrow and myself. And it was I didn't get him till late in life, and it was a funny way he came about it. Just Spendthrift bought into him, and I think Rick was going through some problems at the time, and one of the deals was they were going to pick the trainer. And I don't know how they came up with me. They called one day and asked if I'd go pick him up. And he was older, and he'd already done a lot of running. He was a little rocky at the time. He had some things, aches and pains, and we just started working on him. And I'd say that horse just started getting better and better. And we went and took him up to Canada and prepped him. I don't know if we'd have run him. I think in the contract of the purchase, that said he had to run the Breeders' Cup, and they got part of the purse money for running. But we brought him over here to Churchill, and he just started getting better and better. And the week before the race, Robbie had ridden him a lot his whole life, and Robbie came out and working that day, and he came off the racetrack and said, I tell you, this is the best this horse has ever felt in his life working over for him. And he worked so good. I started getting a little high on him. I actually got a little arrogant, maybe. I started telling people he would win. He would win. And if he handicapped that race, it was a stacked field. But I felt like we were going to peak, and they were kind of, a lot of them looked like they were just kind of tailing off a touch. And if it all worked out, we could win the race. And he put it all together, and he came rolling that day. And I think he's at the time was the second highest priced Breeders' Cup winner in history.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, he was longest shot in the race. He was 64, almost 65-1. He paid $131.60 for the win.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And I tried. I told everybody I ran into, I thought to bet on him. And I think the only one that listened to me, my son Jake. He went over. He was a little kid. He went and bet $50 to win. I remember. And we hit the wire. I didn't know if we won or not. It was so close. And Jake kept saying, we got there. But if you watch the replay, Julian celebrates when he ended up second. He thought he won the race. So we always gave him a little grief about that, celebrating a little too early. He said he's never celebrated a win since then. Until yeah. He gets his picture taken.
A very narrow margin.
Like he already won.
I love it. Court Vision giving Dale his second Breeders' Cup win. Dale, do you ever bet any of your own horses?
I haven't bet on a horse in 30 years, probably.
Really?
No, I don't. You know, when Frank was around, I would handicap and advise him and Frank Jones, and he was one of the biggest gamblers at Churchill Downs. But I never liked it. I said when I was younger, I'd bet them, but if I never won enough, and if I lost, I was mad. So it never worked out either way. And then I got training with so many, and then if you're betting on them, why lose twice?
Yep.
The purse is plenty.
Well, you go from Court Vision in 2011, and then you go back to the scene of your very first Breeders' Cup win, Santa Anita in Arcadia, California, and you come into the Breeders' Cup turf with a horse by the name of Little Mike, and here's the way it sounded from Trevor Denman.
Trailblazer putting in a huge run, and Trailblazer now strikes the front. St. Nicholas Abbey winding up on the outside. Little Mike's hanging tough. Trailblazer up alongside and at the rail point of entry, getting a late run, but it is Little Mike all heart. He's kicking on. Little Mike point of entry, finishing strongly along the inside down the center. St. Nicholas Abbey, Little Mike in front though, and Little Mike in an upset. Little Mike won at point of entry, closing late but not quick enough. St. Nicholas Abbey third, Trailblazer and Sherita in a photo for fourth.
Dale, the knock on Little Mike coming into the race was he can't get the distance. That's what you heard all week long. He got the distance.
He couldn't get a mile and a half, but we had heard it the race before in the Arlington Million. You know, he couldn't get a mile and a quarter. And he went right to the lead and kept right on going. And I guess everybody thought that was just a fluke because they let him walk on the lead and stuff. So Little Mike was a tough horse, and he's not the kind of horse. He was about $500 sire, And the guy that owned him, somebody gave him the mare. But he had that intangible you can't see in a horse. He wouldn't have brought $1,500 at a sale. And he was just a tough, tough horse. And it was interesting. We had went out there planning on running in the mile. But Wise Dan was so dominant then. And we got to looking at the race. I kept thinking, I don't believe we can beat Wise Dan. He's just too good right now. And we started looking at the marathon, the mile and a half, and we started thinking maybe that's the right spot. So we entered thinking we'd go right to the lead and try to do what we did in Arlington Million. The more you got to looking at the race, there were two other speed horses in there, and Todd had one with Joe Bravo on it. And Joe was mad at me at the time because he took off of Little Mike in the Arlington Million, and Ramon Dominguez, we rode him, and Joe wanted me to put him back on, but Ramon was available, and I wasn't changing back. And he was had a lot of speed, the horse Joe was on. So he's going to send out there with us because he knows Little Mike, and he's going to try to mess up our race and make us go way too fast. So we get into the paddock, and Ramon comes out, and he's expecting to, I'm going to say, go on to the front. And say, Ramon, here's what I want you to do. Let the speed go. Even though he's been in front of every race his whole life, going a mile, and let those two horses go out in front of you. Ride like you're on the lead. Just sit there. They'll probably back up. You'll inherit the lead, and you'll just have to ride your ass off from the eighth pole. Might have been the most perfect ride anybody's ever put on a horse. And Ramon did it. It unfolded just like we saw it on paper. And I'd seen it the night before just thinking about it. And it unfolded exactly like that. And Ramon absolutely put one of the most masterful rides anybody's ever put on a horse. And to this day, it's one of the highlights of my career, watching him do that. Ramon's a good friend. A little side story to that. One day, Ramon's such a humble guy. He never realized he was one of the greatest of all times, in my opinion, and I think a lot of other people's opinion in the game.
Yep.
And one day at Saratoga, they had a special day for Hall of Fame jockeys, and just about every living Hall of Fame jockey but a couple was at the races that day, and they recognized them all. And I walked out of the track after the last race, and Ramon's standing there by himself. Started talking. He said, you won't believe what I was doing today. He said, I was hanging out with Angel Cordero, Lafitte and Kai, Georgie Velasquez, Jacinto Vasquez, all my heroes, the greats. And said, you silly son of a guy, don't you realize you were as good or better than every one of those guys you're talking about? No knock to any of them. And so Ramon looked at me kind of funny. He says, I think you're biased because we did something special together.
Yeah, one of the most humble, hardworking. Humble's the right word. I mean, he never viewed himself, even to this day, I don't think he views himself as one of the greats of all time.
No, he doesn't. We hung out a lot this year at Saratoga, a couple, played some pickleball and stuff, and he's just a really good guy. And so we were playing pickleball this summer. We beat two players much better than us, and I said, Ramon, we just did something special together.
Fantastic. By the way, Dale, the horse ridden by Joe Bravo, Turbo Compressor, in that Breeders' Cup turf, went right to the front, opened up early. Optimizer under John Court was just off of his flank, and they finished last and second to last, respectively. Well, Little Mike went on to win after that stalking trip under Ramon. So brilliant strategy.
I don't know if I ever saw a race as clear before, even to this day, as I did that race that day. And I don't know what happened that night before. I just could see it in my mind what exactly was going to happen. And and the next day, the exact thing I saw happen.
That was the same year, I believe, 2012. No, it was the year before that Shackelford was second in the dirt mile, right?
Now you're bringing up one of the worst memories of my career. Yeah. Was he second?
He was second in the dirt mile.
He ran greatness here at Churchill. He was second.
Yeah.
But the same day that Little Mike ran, he ran, and he was like 4-5 favorite. And I didn't think there was any way he could. And I ran six in there, six, I think, that Breeders' Cup. And I thought he was a stone cold cinch. and he stumbled and fell on his head leaving the gate. And for a horse that was always on the lead, was dead last, and picked up a few horses and didn't run very good. And that might have been as low as I've ever been in my career. And I remember me and Jake, I don't know how old he was. He might have been 14 or something, but he was always with me. And I just, there was a bench in the tunnel you walk through to go back to the paddock from the track. And I just sat on that bench, and Jake sat next to me. And I guess he could tell how dejected I was. He says, come on, Dad, we got one more chance. Little Mike going a mile and a half. And I said, yeah, we got one more chance. We'll see what happens. And he was right. The one chance came through.
Yeah, did it ever. Dale, 2,200-plus victories to your career. You went over that 2,200-win milestone not long ago. Congratulations on that. But you don't saddle more than 2,200 winners without a few highs and a few lows, and thankfully you've had more highs, and I know there's more to come in the future, my friend.
Yeah, it's been a good career, and hopefully we get to 3,000.
Yeah, let's keep it rolling. And Dale, I can't thank you enough for spending a little time to look back on some of your favorite memories of the Breeders' Cup, and I know you have more in your future.
Anytime, Mike, and I'll talk to you Saturday.
All right, Dale Romans shared his thoughts. In the second half of the program, I welcome Todd Pletcher to look back on his 15 Breeders' Cup victories. We'll have some surprises in there for Todd, too. Stay with me as Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on HRRN, Breeders' Cup Week Edition. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you along for the ride. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of that incredible conversation I just had with Dale Romans in the first half of the program, or any of my conversation coming up with Todd Pletcher in the second half, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the program there, and you can tune in on every podcast platform. So wherever you access your podcast, type in Horse Racing Radio Network and follow along with every Trainer Talk show and every show we bring your way throughout the week all year long. Don't forget, too, to follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, YouTube, and on Instagram. Well, in the first half of the program, you did hear Dale Romans looking back on his 15-year anniversary of his first Breeders' Cup victory. Well, it was 20 years ago that Hall of Fame trainer Todd Pletcher went to his hometown of Dallas, or just outside of Dallas, in Lone Star Park, returned to Texas to pick up his first win. And he didn't just get one win that year, he got two. And Todd Pletcher is with me now here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Todd, appreciate the time.
Absolutely.
You know, Dale told me he wasn't aware it had been 15 years until I reached out to him and asked him to join me on the program. Can you believe it's been 20 years since that first Breeders' Cup win?
No, I really can't. I mean, it's when you think about things like that that you really, really understand how time does actually fly by.
Well, and to have it happen in your hometown has to be pretty special, too. This is the way it sounded from Tom Durkin that day in 2004.
They make their way toward the top of the stretch. Stellar Jane is also right there. Ella Love on the outside. Storm Flash flying. It's 5 lengths from the lead. Nebraska Tornado's dropped out of it. They're off the turn. Into the stretch. Tamwell digs down. Into the breach goes a shadow. And a shadow comes away with the lead. Storm Flash flying is in behind horses. On the outside, it's Stellar Jane coming down to the finish. A shadow in front and trying to hold on. And at the wire, it is a shadow. Who wins by almost 2 lengths? Storm Flag Flying came on to be second. Stellar Jane was third, and Tamwheel was fourth.
The first of 15 Breeders' Cup wins for Todd Pletcher. Into the breach goes a shadow. One of my favorite Tom Durkin lines of all time.
Yeah, it was a great call. And I mean, she was getting a beautiful trip the entire way, but there was sort of a moment at the top of the stretch where Johnny knew that he had a lot of horse and was kind of looking for a direction to go. And when that seam opened up, she shot in there and like Durkin said, into the breach. And that was pretty exciting.
What do you remember about the moment she crossed the finish line that day?
I think part of it was jubilation and part of it was relief. I think prior to that, maybe we'd had like 12 Breeders' Cup starters and hadn't had a winner yet. And, you know, we were starting to get that question mark. Oh, you know, why can't you win a Breeders' Cup race? And so it was excitement and relief all at the same time.
That happened with the Kentucky Derby too. And then all of a sudden Todd Pletcher breaks through and you didn't stop.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you know, they said I was 0-for-12 in the Breeders' Cup. I was like, wait and see what I can do with the Derby. it was certainly an exciting moment. And, you know, we felt like coming into the race that we were really, really feeling good about the way she was coming into it. And we kind of had the same feeling going in earlier in the year into the Kentucky Oaks that, you know, she was sitting on a big one. And so, you know, it was exciting to see her pull through.
What was it that made a shadow so good?
I think, you know, everything that you would see in that race, just that ability to put herself in a good spot, high cruising speed, and then the ability to accelerate after doing that, and versatility. You know, she could be on the lead if she needed to be. She could lay fourth like she did in that race, or second like she did in the Oaks, and just you know, everything that most of the good ones have, you know, the desire to win and high cruising speed and adaptable at the same time.
Well, you didn't just break through with one Breeders' Cup victory in 2004. A shadow came in the very first Breeders' Cup race of the afternoon. That was the time, by the way, when the Breeders' Cup was one day and there were only 8 Breeders' Cup races. Well, it was 3 races later in the Breeders' Cup sprint that Spitestown put in this winning performance.
Astonishing pace here by Longshot Abundanza. Here comes Goldstorm to the attack on the outside. And Spitestown down at the rail. Those three heading into the final furlong together. Spitestown comes away with the lead. Spitestown in front. Goldstorm battling on, but he is now spent. My Cousin Matt, a Longshot threat coming late. Buona Charlie on the far outside. Keela's coming late too, but it's going to be Spitestown. Spitestown wins by 2 on the wire. Keela comes from way out of it to be second. Longshot, My Cousin Matt was third. And there is a pumped up Johnny Velasquez. Another perfect ride this afternoon. He just puts on a display here of race riding ability. He cuts the corner with Spitestown to win the sprint in 108 flat.
That would turn out to be Spitestown's final career start in what was a tremendous racing career. Todd, as you were listening to that call, what was going through your mind?
Well, the funny thing about leading up to that is in his final breeze at Belmont before we shipped to Lone Star, Angel Cordero had been breezing him for us. And, you know, he was John Velasquez's agent at the time. And Spitestown was a really quirky breeze horse. For a horse who was as talented as he was and as fast as he was, he would sometimes just throw in a dud in the mornings. And so the one thing that we had found was if we put him on the inside, he sometimes wouldn't work well. If we put him on the outside, he would generally always work, you know, the way we wanted him to. So this was before we were using the handheld radios to communicate with the riders. Before we went out, I told Angel he was going to breeze a half mile in company with a horse named West Virginia, who was a really solid New York bred stake horse, but certainly not a grade one horse like Spitestown was. So I told Angel, make sure you go on the outside. Anyways, somewhere between the barn and the track, Angel forgot, and he went on the inside. And Spitestown threw in an absolute dud. West Virginia outworked him by about 5 lengths, and I was just like, I can't believe, you know, that he's worked this way leading into the, you know, being one of the favorites for the Breeders' Cup sprint. But then the race, the way it unfolds, you know, he breaks okay. Johnny kind of hustles him up a little bit. He's laying 4 on the inside. Gap opens up at the top of the stretch. He shoots through and opens up several lengths and holds on to win by, you know, length and a half or whatever it was. But it was just, you know, you go through all of this preparation and try to get everything right, and then you have a miscue like that, and then the horse shows up and runs awesome. So sometimes you probably worry too much about everything.
Yeah. When's the last time, Todd, that you actually went back and watched a replay of either of those two victories?
Today. Yeah, no. Yeah. Once you sent me that text and 20 years, I said, you know what, I want to go back and watch those. So I did this morning, actually.
I'm sure that still puts a smile on your face.
Absolutely, yeah. It was cool. I mean, it was a homecoming of sorts for me. I was born in Dallas and went to school in San Antonio. And, you know, a lot of family members were at Lone Star that day that generally wouldn't come to the races. So it was made it kind of extra special.
Both of those horses, by the way, bred by Aaron and Marie Jones, and the ownership groups involved, Starlight Racing with a Shadow and Eugene and Laura Melnick with Spitestown. Those were connections that meant an awful lot to you early on in your career.
Oh, huge, huge. You know, both of those horses played a big part in getting our stable going. Eugene and Laura Melnick, I mean, they were kind of some of the first clients that we had that were, you know, very competitive in the yearling and 2-year-old market. And I mean, Spitestown's an example. He was a $2 million yearling, I think, at one of the last, if not the last, Keeneland summer yearling sale. And I remember telling Eugene when he was a yearling, I said, I think this horse is going to be really precocious and you know, he'll be an outstanding 2-year-old. I'm not sure what he'll do after that. And, of course, he was able to win a Breeders' Cup at 6, and I don't think he even won at 2, and then went on to have a remarkable stallion career as well.
Well, that was 17 years, believe it or not, before you would be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And when you saddle your first 2 Breeders' Cup winners, none of us in the sport knew where your career would take you, but we knew you were on the fast track to greatness. And here you are in 2004 with those 2 wins. You move on a couple of years later to 2007. We come to Monmouth Park, and it was a rainy, miserable deluge. It was a bog of a turf course. Didn't bother English Channel at all. Here's what he did that day.
And it's English Channel, the horse to beat now. English Channel takes the lead, and he looks strong as they turn for home. Chandonan second. Fry Guy can find no more. Dylan Thomas making real hard work of it. Can he come out now? Red Rocks down the center. Grand Couturier tries to get involved late. Bit of talk now down the center. But it's English Channel absolutely dominating them out here. And it's going to be English Channel and John Velasquez runaway winners in the Breeders' Cup turf. English Channel's romping in from Chandonan. Red Rocks third. A disappointing Dylan Thomas is in a photo with Bit of Talk now for 4.
Trevor Denman with the call. Todd, how impressive was that victory?
Yeah, that was a wow performance for sure. And like you said, I mean, the conditions were, unfortunately for Monmouth hosting it, were just, I mean, horrendous for the few days leading into it. And it was an absolute bog. The one thing that I was concerned about was the only time English Channel ever ran kind of an off race was when we took him to Dubai. And Johnny felt like that the ground in Dubai, you know, they kind of watered the course, and it was, I think, labeled good or good to firm, but it was a little bit on the softer side than what we'd been running at Gulfstream. And so, you know, I'm thinking in the back of my mind, I'm just concerned if he's going to handle the ground. But, you know, this was far different, far softer than generally they would ever run on in the United States. So he obviously took to it really, really well, and just, you know, it was a pretty dominating performance. It was a lot of fun. You know, Jim Scaturcio and his family from Rumson, New Jersey, and Monmouth Park was their home track, and he'd won 2 United Nations there. And, you know, for him to be able to win the Breeders' Cup turf on Jim's home ground was pretty special.
And like Spitestown, that was his final career race, a career that led him to win 13 of 23 starts, more than $5.3 million. Was that English Channel's greatest performance?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, and he had some great ones. I think it actually even held the track record at Gulfstream going 1 1/8 up until maybe this past season. But yeah, that was, you know, that was a dominant performance against, you know, some really top horses. And I know that Mr. Tabor. I talked to him the morning of the race, and they were bringing over Dylan Thomas, who they were pretty high on. So it was, you know, to beat an international field like that the way it did was awesome.
Well, at that point in your career, you were kind of into a pattern of winning a Breeders' Cup race or multiple Breeders' Cup races every third year, 2004, 2007, and then in 2010, you won three races, all of them coming with juveniles, including this performance by the brilliant Uncle Mo.
They are coming to the top of the lane, and Riveting Reason desperate to hold on, but Uncle Mo is breathing down his neck, and Uncle Mo is let loose, and look at him stride away. Uncle Mo, big leaping strides. He's opening up. Boys on Toscanova is second, but this is an overwhelming performance by Uncle Mo, the son of Indian Charlie. John Velasquez just got to point him in the right direction, takes a look back. Uncle Mo, superb in the juvenile. It'll be Boys of Toscanova in second. Rogue Romance finished up third, and Biondetti ran on fourth.
Superb, breathtaking, a lot of superlatives you could use to describe Uncle Mo, and especially that performance, Todd.
Yeah, that was spectacular, and yeah, Mike Rapoli and I talk about that every once in a while. If you're in a bad mood, just go to YouTube and watch that race again. Yeah, I mean, Trevor's call kind of summed it all up. It was phenomenal.
Yeah. Do you remember what was going through your mind as you're watching him come through the stretch that day?
Yeah, I mean, we had super high expectations coming in, and, you know, we felt like we had the best horse, which that's always, you know, a more nerve-wracking experience when you feel like you have the best horse and you just need some good luck to hopefully get it done. But every once in a while, you know, as with the one with English Channel and with this one with Uncle Mo, you kind of at the eighth pole just get to kind of enjoy the race. And it's not always that you can do that.
Do you immediately start thinking about getting back to Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May of the following year?
Oh yeah. That's the first goal in your mind. The first thing you start thinking about is sort of the game plan you're going to have to, you know, to hopefully get you back there, which, as we know, that didn't turn out the way we'd hoped.
Yeah, but he was spectacular that day in 2010 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He joined Pluck and More Than Real as your other winners that year. That was one hell of a Breeders' Cup, brother.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah, Pluck was one that looked like he lost all chance at the start. And actually, Garrett Gomez ended up riding both Pluck and More Than Real and gave them both outstanding rides. So it was a good weekend for our juveniles for sure.
Six victories in the Breeders' Cup to that point in 2010 and 2012. Shanghai Bobby comes back and wins the Juvenile again. 2015, Liam's Map wins the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. Then you had Stop Charging Maria that same season in the Distaff. And then in 2018, it was Bulletin. Of the four names I just mentioned, Shanghai Bobby, Liam's Map, Stop Charging Maria, Bulletin, what thoughts come to mind when you hear those names?
Same thing, all exciting races. I mean, I think Liam's Map was the one that you know, we were really high on his chances. And you know, the one thing Javier Castellano and I talked about is, you know, the main thing we need to do is make sure we get off to a good start here and get to the first turn in good position. And he actually kind of blew the start. And I was like, oh, man, this didn't begin at all the way we had discussed. And as it turned out, you know, it ended up working out fine. And he was able to win convincingly. But it was a little bit worrisome the first half a mile, 5/8, just kind of trying to get to that position that we wanted to get right from the gate.
So much of that is, well, all of it is out of your control, Todd. And I love to ask trainers this question. You put in all the time and the work, and you're up early every day, and you get the horses ready to peak for a certain race, and then once you give a leg up to a jockey and they get into the starting gate, everything's out of your control. Is that sometimes hard to take?
Well, it can be frustrating for sure and disappointing, but, you know, I think we generally try to have guys on board that we have confidence in, and we know they're going to go out there and give us their best effort. And, you know, sometimes we all make mistakes. Some of them are jockeys' faults, trainers' faults, horses' faults, and you know, it's just part of the business. But when you know, when you go into big races, we generally try to come up with what we consider to be our first plan, plan A, and then, you know, you got to have the confidence that you have the right guys on board that can call an audible if things don't work out to the first plan.
Well, things worked out pretty well for you in 2019 in the Breeders' Cup Classic and this signature performance by Vino Rosso.
They're coming to the top of the stretch, and it is McKenzie off the turn in front. Vino Rosso comes up to him as they arrive at the eighth pole. McKenzie digs down. Vino Rosso alongside. These two at the 16th pole. Vino Rosso has taken the lead. And it's a vintage performance by Vino Rosso in the Breeders' Cup Classic. McKenzie was second. Higher Power was third. And Elite was fourth. It was Vino Rosso and Errat Ortiz.
Todd, who was more pumped up after that race, Larry Colmus or you?
Probably me. That was another example sort of one that I remember just the way that the box section was set up. And I was in a seat where I was kind of behind where my wife Tracy was. My daughter Hannah was sort of just in front of me. One of my best friends from college and his wife, who live in California, were there. And then I kind of had the Rapoli section and the Viola section down in front of me. So it was really cool that I could, at the eighth pole, see that it looked like Vino Rosso was going to win. And I was sort of watching the race, but I was also watching, you know, all of those people and watching them take it in and cheer. And it was just by happenstance that I was in a position where I could take all of that in. And I think for me, it was actually one of the coolest races I've ever watched. Because you're winning the classic, but to get to see everyone's reaction while it was happening was spectacular.
Yeah. What's it like to have a guy like Mike Rapoli involved with so many of the big wins that you've taken part of, at least in recent years? He's a guy that loves the game. He can be abrasive at times, but he is always so passionate about the sport of thoroughbred racing. And it's always so much fun to watch him on television after he wins a big race because he loves to celebrate. What's it like to have that guy involved with you?
I mean, it's awesome. And, you know, for me, that's part of what makes my job fun is, you know, when you can be part of and create those kind of moments. And to me, that's the most satisfying part is when you can have, you know, those owners and their families and friends and have them enjoy it so much and get so much excitement from it. That's what's really rewarding, I think, to me and our staff.
As you mentioned, Vinny Viola also involved with the ownership of Vino Rosso and that victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Did you go back and watch that race to get ready for the show too?
I didn't watch that one. I've seen it recently. I will say, we've you know been fortunate enough to go in with some chances. I don't know that we've ever gone into a Breeders' Cup race feeling as good about the way a horse was training as we did with Vino Rosso. He had such a spectacular 2 months leading into that, and this couple of breezes after the Jockey Club. I mean, he just gave us every indication that he was sitting on, you know, his best performance. And so, yeah, we were really excited coming into it, and it was just great to see him deliver to what he'd been promising us in the mornings.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, I got to spend an hour on this program with your longtime assistant, Amelia Green, and she's going to be going out on her own after Breeders' Cup. And one thing she mentioned on that show was how much she enjoyed working with Life is Good, who went on in 2021 to win the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. She said, Todd, she never felt anything else like that when she got aboard Life is Good. She said he was on a different level. Do you agree?
He was a superb training horse. He did things in the morning so effortlessly and impressively. He was super fast and, you know, had the ability to carry that over a route of ground too. Just, you know, very, very versatile. And I've seen some still images of like him leaving the gate and when he's first getting going and just the elevation that he would get and the length of his stride and the power that he had. It was visible to see as a trainer, but certainly when you talk to, you know, Irad or even Flavian rode him once for us and talking to Amelia about, you know, how he felt under them, he just like she had said, tremendous power and you know, the speed to go along with it was just phenomenal.
Well, the following year in 2022, you win another Breeders' Cup race. As a matter of fact, you win a couple. That was with Forte in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And then this race, which I thought was the race of the Breeders' Cup, it came courtesy of Malathot.
Secret Oath, the leader. Ness goes to second. Society drops back into third position. Blue Stripe is in fourth. Malathot fifth. Clairiere is sixth. Has to move off the rail to try to find some more running room. Top of the lane. Secret Oath is the leader. Ness, Blue Stripe, Malathot. Clairiere fifth toward the inside. Secret Oath, Blue Stripe coming forward. Clairiere to the rail. Malathot to the outside. Blue Stripe has the lead. Malathot, Clairiere moves up the rail, but still third. Blue Stripe, Clairiere, Malathot, Clairiere trying, Blue Stripe in front, Malathot is there, Blue Stripe, Clairiere, Malathot, maybe, what a finish, 1 minute, 49.07 seconds.
Kurt Becker somehow keeping it all together and keeping it straight through the stretch there, what a finish. That, Todd, that's what we all do this for, right? That moment when all those horses hit the wire together and in what was one of the greatest races in Breeders' Cup history is pretty special.
That was an incredible race. And I tell you, I got lucky myself because where I was positioned in the box I was in, I thought I had a really good look at it. And I thought for sure that Malathot had gotten there. And I celebrated as though she had won. And then they start showing the replays again and again and again. And I'm like, holy Christ, this is really, really close. I'm going to feel like an idiot if she didn't win. And the longer the photo took, I was just like, oh man. But we were fortunate enough to be, you know, literally there just in time. That last surge got her home. And that was a phenomenal race. And so happy for her and for her to kind of wrap up a second championship was really special.
She was tough as nails, as was Fierceness, last year's winner of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Boy, he just put it all together and a bit of redemption in that race for him last year.
Yeah, I mean, trained super well before his debut. His debut was sort of, I wouldn't say, there's very few maidens that will ever run as good as Uncle Mo did in his debut, but it was a very impressive debut. And, you know, we went to the Champagne and got bumped around a little bit and didn't fire. And we were really, really disappointed after that and decided not to overthink it and brought him to Keeneland and with the rest of the Breeders' Cup horses that we were preparing to get to Santa Anita, and decided we'd see how he trained, and he put in a couple of really good breezes, and we decided to kind of just toss the Champagne and regroup, and certainly glad we did because, he delivered a huge performance.
Todd, I didn't think we'd get through all 15 Breeders' Cup wins in 30 minutes here today, but we did it, and all the best going forward. Here's to 16, 17, 18, and beyond. Let's hope you get a few more this year.
Well, we're very thankful for the ones we've had, and we'll keep trying for some more.
Keep it rolling, my friend.
Thanks so much.
All right, Todd Pletcher here looking back on his Breeders' Cup wins. Doesn't get any better than that, right? What an hour. Dale Roman's Todd Pletcher. If you missed any portion, do yourself a favor. Head back and listen to the podcast. Listen to it multiple times. It is worth it, I promise you that. If you missed any portion, you can do that on our website and on every podcast platform. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, and our Lexington studio, to Fasig Tipton for making these shows possible each and every week. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk here on HRN.